All right, so here's what I keep thinking about when it comes to hearing aid dispenser training. You don't need to be a surgeon, but you absolutely need to understand the ear well enough to connect what you see during otoscopy, what the audiogram shows, and when to refer someone to a physician.
Exactly. And the best way to build that understanding is to follow sound on its actual journey, from the moment it enters the outer ear all the way to the brain. Because where that journey breaks down tells you everything about the type of hearing loss you're dealing with.
So let's start at the very beginning. The outer ear. What's actually happening there?
The outer ear has two main parts working together. First, the auricle, also called the pinna, which is the visible curved structure on the side of the head. It and the concha, that bowl-shaped depression leading into the ear canal, collect sound and funnel it inward. Think of it like a satellite dish shaped specifically for human speech frequencies.
And then that sound travels down the external auditory canal.
Right. The canal directs sound toward the tympanic membrane, the eardrum. Now, this canal can get blocked. Impacted cerumen, which is just compacted earwax, is one of the most common causes of conductive hearing loss a dispenser will encounter, and it's completely visible during otoscopy, which is why checking the canal before any hearing test is non-negotiable.
So otoscopy isn't just a formality, it's actually diagnostic.
Absolutely. A perforation, inflammation, discharge, fluid behind the drum. Any of those findings should prompt caution or a medical referral before fitting a device. The tympanic membrane itself converts those incoming air pressure waves into mechanical vibration. It's the bridge between the air-filled outer ear and the mechanical middle ear.
Mm-hmm. So once the eardrum is vibrating, what picks that up?
Three tiny bones, the ossicles, the malleus, incus, and stapes. In plain English, the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup. The malleus is attached directly to the eardrum, so it moves first. It passes vibration to the incus, which passes it to the stapes. The stapes is the innermost one, and it contacts the oval window, the membrane-covered entrance to the fluid-filled cochlea.
Wait! So the middle ear is essentially a mechanical relay system, converting eardrum movement into something that can drive fluid?
Exactly right. And that conversion matters because fluid is much harder to move than air. The ossicular chain actually amplifies the force of vibration to make that transition efficient. Now, for this system to work, the middle ear needs to be at the right pressure, and that's where the Eustachian tube comes in.
The Eustachian tube connects the middle ear to the back of the throat. Right?
To the nasopharynx, yes. It equalizes air pressure across the eardrum and helps drain any fluid. When it's not functioning, think of a bad cold or chronic congestion, pressure builds up, the eardrum can't vibrate freely, and you get a conductive hearing loss. For our listener studying for the licensing exam, Eustachian tube dysfunction is a classic middle ear conductive scenario.
Now, once the stapes moves the oval window, we're inside the cochlea. That's where things get really interesting.
This is the heart of it. The cochlea is a spiral, snail-shaped organ filled with fluid. Movement of the stapes at the oval window creates pressure waves in that fluid. The cochlea has three fluid-filled compartments, the scala vestibuli and scala tympani, both filled with perilymph, and between them the scala media, filled with a different fluid called endolymph. The scala media houses the organ of Corti.
And the round window, where does that fit?
Great question. The round window is a flexible membrane on the other side of the cochlea. When the stapes pushes fluid in through the oval window, the round window bulges outward to relieve that pressure. Without it, the fluid couldn't move at all. Think of squeezing one end of a sealed water balloon. The other end has to give.
So the fluid movement drives the basilar membrane, which carries the organ of Corti, and that's where the hair cells are.
Precisely. The basilar membrane moves in response to fluid motion, and the organ of Corti rides on top of it. When the basilar membrane moves, it bends the stereocilia, those microscopic hair-like projections on the hair cells. Bending those stereocilia opens mechanically gated channels, which triggers an electrical signal. That's mechanoelectrical transduction, mechanical movement converted to a neural signal.
And there are two types of hair cells doing different jobs.
Right. Inner hair cells are the primary sensory receptors. They send most of the auditory information through the auditory nerve to the brain. Outer hair cells are more like active amplifiers. They sharpen and boost the cochlea's response, improving sensitivity and frequency selectivity. Here's the critical clinical point. Human cochlear hair cells generally do not regenerate after significant damage, so when they're gone, the hearing loss is permanent.
Which brings us to tonotopy, the frequency map of the cochlea.
This is essential for reading audiograms. High frequencies are detected near the base of the cochlea, the part closest to the oval window. Lower frequencies are represented progressively toward the apex, the innermost tip. Age-related hearing loss and noise-induced damage both tend to hit the base first, which is why high-frequency loss is so common. On an audiogram, that shows up as poorer thresholds at the higher frequencies.
And that explains the classic complaint. I can hear people talking, but I can't understand what they're saying.
Exactly that. High-frequency consonants, sounds like S, F, TH, carry most of the information that distinguishes words. When those hair cells at the base are damaged, speech is audible but not intelligible. The vowels come through because they're lower frequency, but the consonants that separate words are gone. That's a sensorineural pattern, and it's the most common thing a dispenser will see.
Before we close, the balance system. It shares the inner ear with the cochlea, which matters clinically.
It does. The vestibular system sits right alongside the cochlea. The three semicircular canals detect head rotation. The utricle and saccule detect linear acceleration and changes in head position relative to gravity. So an inner ear disorder can affect both hearing and balance simultaneously, which is why a patient reporting dizziness alongside hearing changes is a referral flag, not just a hearing aid candidate.
So the takeaway for everyone studying this material is really about the chain. Sound fails to reach the cochlea. That's conductive. Something goes wrong inside the cochlea or auditory nerve. That's sensorineural. Both together, mixed. And the auditory nerve carries the signal to the brain. But detecting sound and understanding sound are two different things.
That's the framework. The ear detects, the brain interprets, and knowing where in that chain the problem lives, outer ear, middle ear, cochlea, nerve, or central processing, is what separates a dispenser who fits devices from one who truly serves their patients well.
So let's walk through the full pathway one more time, start to finish, because that sequence is exactly what the licensing exam will test.
Good call. Sound starts at the pinna, the outer ear, which funnels it into the external auditory canal. The canal directs it toward the tympanic membrane. The eardrum vibrates. The malleus picks that up, passes it to the incus, incus to the stapes. Stapes pushes the oval window. Fluid moves inside the cochlea. The basilar membrane travels. The organ of Corti fires. The auditory nerve carries the signal, and the brain interprets it. That's the chain.
12 steps. And the sight of failure in that chain tells everyone what type of loss they're dealing with.
Exactly. Outer or middle ear fails. That's conductive. Think impacted cerumen blocking the canal, a perforated eardrum, fluid behind the drum, or a stiff ossicular chain. The cochlea or auditory nerve fails. That's sensorineural, both together, mixed. The key clinical marker for conductive loss is the air-bone gap on the audiogram. Air conduction thresholds are worse than bone conduction thresholds because the mechanical pathway is impaired.
And sensorineural loss. No air-bone gap. Both thresholds shift together.
Right. And the most common sensorineural pattern a dispenser will see is high-frequency loss sloping downward on the audiogram. That's cochlear tonotopy at work. High frequencies map to the base of the cochlea, lower frequencies to the apex. Age-related loss and noise damage both hit the base first, so the high-frequency thresholds drop while the lows stay relatively intact.
Which is why someone says they can hear the conversation but can't follow it.
That's the clinical picture. Vowels are low frequency, they carry loudness. Consonants like S, F, and TH are high frequency, they carry meaning. When the base is damaged, the vowels come through but the consonants that separate words are gone. Speech is audible, it's just not intelligible. That's the distinction every dispenser needs to be able to explain to a patient.
Now, for everyone studying for the exam, what are the highest yield facts to lock in?
The pinna and concha collect and funnel sound. 2. The external auditory canal can be blocked by impacted cerumen, causing conductive loss. 3. The tympanic membrane converts air pressure to mechanical vibration. Always inspect it before fitting. 4. The ossicles are malleus, incus, stapes, hammer, anvil, stirrup, in that order. 5. The stapes contacts the oval window, coupling mechanical vibration to cochlear fluid.
Keep going.
The round window allows pressure relief so fluid can actually move. 7. The Eustachian tube equalizes middle ear pressure. Dysfunction causes conductive loss. 8. The cochlea has 3 compartments, scala vestibuli and scala tympani filled with perilymph, and the scala media filled with endolymph, which houses the organ of Corti. 9. The basilar membrane moves and bends hair cell stereocilia. 10. Bending stereocilia opens ion channels and triggers an electrical signal, that's mechanoelectrical transduction.
And the hair cells themselves, that distinction matters.
Inner hair cells are the primary sensory receptors, sending information to the auditory nerve. Outer hair cells amplify and sharpen the cochlea's response. 12. Cochlear hair cells generally do not regenerate. Damage is permanent, which is why noise-induced and age-related sensory neural loss is irreversible. 13. High frequencies at the base, low frequencies at the apex, tonotopy. 14. The semicircular canals detect rotation. The utricle and saccule detect linear acceleration and gravity. 15. The ear detects sound, the brain interprets it.
All right, quiz questions. Suppose someone studying this hears, a patient reports gradual difficulty understanding speech and noise, especially on the phone. Audiogram shows normal low-frequency thresholds and significantly elevated thresholds above 2,000 Hz. What type of loss is this, and what structure is most likely involved?
That's a classic high-frequency sensorineural pattern. The sloping audiogram, the speech and noise complaint, the preserved lows, all point to cochlear hair cell damage at the base. No airbone gap means the outer and middle ear are intact. The answer is sensorineural hearing loss, most likely involving cochlear hair cells, consistent with age-related or noise-induced damage.
A patient has a history of frequent ear infections and reports a feeling of fullness. Otoscopy shows a dull, retracted eardrum. Air conduction thresholds are elevated. Bone conduction thresholds are normal. What's the likely mechanism?
Air-bone gap with normal bone conduction. That's a conductive component. The retracted eardrum and history of infections suggest middle ear dysfunction, possibly Eustachian tube problems or fluid behind the drum. The eardrum can't vibrate freely, so sound isn't reaching the cochlea efficiently. The cochlea itself is fine, hence normal bone conduction. That's a middle ear conductive loss, and it warrants medical referral before any device fitting.
And the balance question. A patient reports sudden hearing loss in one ear, along with episodes of vertigo. What does that combination suggest about the site of the problem?
The cochlea and vestibular system share the inner ear. When both hearing and balance are affected simultaneously, the problem is almost certainly in the inner ear, not the outer or middle ear, which have no role in balance. That combination is a referral flag. The dispenser should not be fitting a device until a physician has evaluated for inner ear pathology. The takeaway for everyone studying this, dizziness plus hearing change equals refer first.
Know the chain, know where it can break, and know what each break looks like on a test and in a patient.
That's it. Good dispensing starts with knowing whether sound is failing to reach the cochlea, failing inside the cochlea, or being detected by the ear but interpreted by the brain with difficulty. The anatomy isn't just academic. It's the map that guides every otoscopy, every audiogram interpretation, and every referral decision a dispenser makes.
One more thing worth sitting with before everyone closes their notes, the brain piece. Because the ear can detect sound perfectly, and the brain can still struggle to make sense of it.
That's the distinction that trips people up most in counseling. The auditory nerve carries electrical information from the cochlea toward the brain, but detecting a signal is not the same as understanding it. The brain has to interpret that neural activity as speech, music, a word, something meaningful.
So a patient could have a clean audiogram and still complain about clarity.
Exactly. And that's where the dispenser's job gets nuanced. Audibility is what the ear provides. Intelligibility is what the brain constructs. A hearing aid can restore audibility. It can make sounds louder and more accessible. But if the brain's processing is compromised, amplification alone won't fully restore understanding.
Mm-hmm. That's a conversation every dispenser will have with a patient at some point.
Often on day one of a fitting, someone says, I can hear you, I just can't understand you. That's not a contradiction. That's a real neurological distinction. The ear is doing its job, the interpretation layer is where the difficulty lives.
All right, let's do the full pathway one final time. Start to finish, no gaps.
Sound enters at the pinna. The auricle and concha collect and funnel it into the external auditory canal. The canal directs it toward the tympanic membrane. The eardrum vibrates, converting air pressure waves into mechanical vibration.
Middle ear.
The malleus picks up that vibration from the eardrum, passes it to the incus, which passes it to the stapes. The stapes, the innermost ossicle, pushes against the oval window, coupling mechanical vibration to the fluid inside the cochlea.
And then the cochlea takes over.
Stapes' movement at the oval window creates pressure waves in the cochlear fluids. Those waves travel through the scalar vestibuli. The round window allows pressure relief through the scalar tympani, and the basilar membrane begins to move. The organ of Corti rides on that membrane. Hair cells stereocilia bend, ion channels open, an electrical signal is generated. That's mechanoelectrical transduction. The inner hair cells send that signal through the auditory nerve toward the brain.
12 steps, pinna to brain.
And every step is a potential failure point. That's the map a dispenser works from every single day.
For everyone studying this material, think of it as a chain of energy transformations. Air pressure becomes mechanical movement. Mechanical movement becomes fluid movement. Fluid movement becomes electrical signal. Electrical signal becomes perceived sound. Each transformation has a structure responsible for it.
And when one structure fails, the transformation stops there. That's why knowing the anatomy isn't academic. It tells the dispenser where to look, what the audiogram pattern means, and whether the patient needs a device, a referral, or both.
The takeaway for everyone preparing for the licensing exam: know the chain, know the structures, know what breaks where, and know what each break looks like on an audiogram and in a patient's complaint.
Conductive loss, outer or middle ear, air bone gap on the audiogram, often medically treatable. Sensorineural loss, cochlear or auditory nerve, no air bone gap, often permanent, especially when hair cells are involved. Mixed loss, both components present. And always do otoscopy first, because what's visible in the canal or at the eardrum can change everything about how the evaluation proceeds.
And the balance system. One last note on that.
The vestibular system shares the inner ear with the cochlea. The three semicircular canals detect head rotation. The utricle and saccule detect linear acceleration and changes in head position relative to gravity. When a patient presents with both hearing loss and dizziness together, that combination points to the inner ear, and it's a referral flag, not a fitting opportunity.
Dizziness plus hearing change. Refer first.
Always. Good dispensing starts with knowing whether sound is failing to reach the cochlea, failing inside the cochlea, or being detected by the ear, but interpreted by the brain with difficulty. The anatomy is the map. The audiogram is the readout. The patient's complaint is the story. A dispenser's job is to connect all three.
So before everyone closes out their notes, let's make sure the key facts are locked in. What would someone studying for the licensing exam absolutely need to have memorized cold?
Start with the pathway itself. Pinna collects sound, canal directs it. Tympanic membrane converts air pressure to mechanical vibration. Then the ossicles, malleus, incus, stapes, in that order, carry vibration to the oval window.
And the stapes is the one that actually touches the oval window.
Right. The stapes is the innermost ossicle, and it's the bridge between the mechanical middle ear and the fluid-filled inner ear. That contact point is where the energy transformation changes character entirely, from mechanical to fluid pressure.
Then, inside the cochlea, three compartments.
Scala vestibuli and scala tympani, both filled with perilymph. And the scala media, the cochlear duct, sits between them, filled with endolymph. That's where the organ of Corti lives. The basilar membrane moves, stereocilia bend, ion channels open, and the hair cell generates an electrical signal.
Mechanoelectrical transduction. That's the term for that conversion step.
Exactly. And the two hair cell types matter here. Inner hair cells are the primary sensory receptors. They send most of the auditory information through the nerve fibers to the brain. Outer hair cells amplify and sharpen the response. Think of outer hair cells as the cochlea's built-in fine-tuning system.
And when those hair cells are gone,
they don't come back. Human cochlear hair cells generally do not regenerate after significant damage. That's why noise-induced and age-related sensorineural hearing loss tends to be permanent. No hair cells, no transduction, no signal.
So for the exam, What's the tonotopy rule? Because that one shows up in audiogram interpretation constantly.
High frequencies at the base of the cochlea, lower frequencies toward the apex. That's cochlear tonotopy. And because the base is exposed to the most mechanical stress, from both aging and noise, high frequency thresholds are typically the first to worsen on an audiogram.
Which is why someone can still hear a conversation, but can't follow it.
Exactly. Low frequency vowel sounds carry the volume of speech. High frequency consonants, the S, F, TH, SH sounds, carry the meaning. When the base of the cochlea is damaged, those consonants drop out. The person hears that someone is talking. They just can't decode what's being said.
That's the complaint dispensers hear constantly. I can hear you. I just can't understand you.
And now everyone listening knows exactly why that happens anatomically. It's not confusion or inattention. It's a frequency-specific gap in cochlear function, visible right there on the audiogram as poorer thresholds at the higher frequencies.
All right, loss types. For the exam, what are the three categories and how does each show up?
Conductive loss is a problem in the outer or middle ear. Think impacted cerumen, perforated eardrum, fluid behind the drum, ossicular dysfunction. On the audiogram, air conduction thresholds are poorer than bone conduction thresholds. That gap is the air-bone gap, and it's the signature of a conductive component.
And sensormural?
Cochlea or auditory nerve. No air-bone gap. Both air and bone conduction are equally reduced, often permanent, especially when hair cells are involved. Age-related loss and noise-induced loss both fall here. Mixed loss has both components, some conductive element on top of an underlying sensory neural loss.
One thing worth flagging for everyone, otoscopy before anything else.
Always. Otoscopy matters before hearing evaluation and before any fitting. Cerumen, canal inflammation, discharge, perforation, any of those can affect test results, affect how a device couples to the ear, or signal that the patient needs a medical referral before a dispenser does anything else.
And the audiogram itself, what does it actually show versus what it doesn't show?
The audiogram displays frequency in hertz on the horizontal axis and hearing level in decibels on the vertical axis. It describes the degree and pattern of threshold loss. For example, a sloping high-frequency loss pattern is consistent with noise exposure or aging. But the audiogram alone doesn't identify every medical cause. That's why history, otoscopy, and sometimes referral all work together.
The key idea being that the audiogram is a readout, not a diagnosis.
Well put. And the dispenser's job is to connect the audiogram pattern to the anatomy, to the patient's complaint, and to the appropriate next step, whether that's a fitting, a referral, or both.
Last high yield point, the balance system. What does everyone need to remember about that for the exam?
Three semicircular canals detect head rotation. The utricle and saccule detect linear acceleration and changes in head position relative to gravity. The vestibular system shares the inner ear with the cochlea. So when a patient presents with both hearing loss and dizziness together, that combination points to the inner ear. And it's a referral flag, not a fitting opportunity.
Dizziness plus hearing change. Refer first. That's the rule.
That's the rule. And the broader takeaway for everyone preparing for this exam. Know the chain. Know what each structure does. Know where it can break. And know what each break looks like on a test and in a patient's complaint. Good dispensing starts with knowing whether sound is failing to reach the cochlea, failing inside the cochlea, or being detected by the ear but interpreted by the brain with difficulty. The anatomy is the map. Use it.